Welcome to Building Better Relationships at Home and at Work with Angela and Patty podcast. This is Patty, a leadership and work-life balance coach from Arizona, USA.
And this is Angela, love and relationship coach from Sydney, Australia. And we are building better relationships with you.
Sharing new perspectives on being heart-centered at home and at work.
So you can draw on your inner power to make your relationships and the world a better place to be around.
The Building Better Relationships Journal and Meditation. We created the Building Better Relationships Journal and Meditation so you can magnetize the better relationships you want and focus on the positive role that you have in creating a better life through your relationships. We are excited for you to discover the gold within you that can help you manifest the love we all crave. The Building Better Relationships Journal has coaching questions that help you listen to the truth of what you want and what helps you to be empowered in love. The Building Better Relationships meditation is designed to strengthen your heart's ability to be that change you wish to see in the world. Why not download it now and think of it as a gift to those you love? If you love journaling and meditation, this is for you. In this podcast episode, we have a special guest, Joseph McGuire of Clear Sight Communication. Joseph McGuire was previously here on Building Better Relationship at Home and at Work podcast episode 76, Does Face Reading Build Better Relationships? Joseph McGuire has been trained in the ancient Chinese skill of face reading and body language since 1995, initially to healthcare professionals as a diagnostic and communication tools. He qualified and practiced as a holistic therapist in several modalities for 30 years. In recent years, Joseph has added skills from the fields of negotiation and interrogation. His primary focus has been on assisting clients with C-level interviewing, negotiation, executive communication, client profiling, and sales team communication skills.
He has worked with clients in pharma, aviation, TV, financial services, among others. He has now developed behavioral negotiation program for business leaders. This provides in-depth understanding of their communication patterns and how they're perceived, detailed insights into the behavioral patterns of their counterparts and real-time assistance in reading the room. He's highly experienced in the role of confidential, impartial, and unbiased observer, and NDAs are a standard part of client relationships. Joseph has three adult children and currently lives with his partner in Dublin, Ireland.
Welcome back, Joseph.
Yes, welcome back. So good to have you back.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
So, Joseph, what have you been up to since we last talked?
Oh, gosh, that's a while ago. So many adventures and life changes. And there's always something new because I've worked in so many different areas and people are just endlessly fascinating. So it's not so much important to me which, like, what area of business people are in, as long as it's people and as long as they're reasonably open to improving the quality of their communication, improving their relationships, being willing to show up in a real and authentic way, because showing up time and time again in research that trust is so important in the business place, in the workplace. And so many, like, I've looked at the Edelman Trust Report over the last several years, and the element of trust has come up so often in terms of, you know, the terms like the Great Resignation, quiet quitting, etc., where people have left because they haven't felt trust from the management, or they haven't felt trust towards the management and the leadership. So trust is an increasingly important area that I work with people with. And another thing that's come up, I wasn't looking for it, but the number of people who've approached me, business people who've been deceived or scammed or conned, whatever term you want to use, and they're looking for assistance, not just in identifying the potential scammers, but also in developing their own skills to recognize things before they actually happen.
Wow. Hence about the scammers. Sorry, I just wanted to linger there at the moment. So people with business relationships, they're being scanned in person or online, or how is that manifesting?
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening on interpersonal connections rather than the text message or the phony offer, via email, etc. It's happening in person, where people are presenting, like whether it's a virtual conversation or an in-person conversation, people are presenting as being very credible, very articulate, and a wonderful offer you can't miss, etc., etc. And they're often very well groomed, very charming, very persuasive. And one of the things that many people don't realize is that a really good scammer, con man, con woman, is adept at recognizing the vulnerability of the person they choose to pick on. It's like they have a wonderful, a very precise radar for choosing their potential victims. And they have no compunction about it. They're very good on picking up on the empathy of the person, but they don't have it themselves.
And so that means, Joseph, that one of the skills you teach is firstly how to accept that the scammer doesn't have empathy, and then also how to read whether they're being authentic or whether they're lying. Is that part of the skills that you share now?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily always easy to recognize when somebody is lying. I mean, I deal with primarily nonverbal skills, but there's a whole set of skills in terms of recognizing the verbals as well, the words, the language, the linguistics, tone of voice, some of which I work with, particularly the tone of voice and the congruency of, verbal language and nonverbal. But there's, as humans, we have a predilection, if you like, an unconscious predilection for believing people are honest. So it's very easy to be sucked in when people seem credible and charming, etc. So we need to be conscious of that inherent bias within ourselves. And if an offer is too good to be true or appears to be too good to be true,
it probably
step back and review. And one of the things I tend to say to people is, like, if you're not sure about it, do not agree to anything. Be really pedantic about it, even if it's not your nature. Be really pedantic about it and make sure that the other person dots every I, crosses every T, and even then drag it out. And you'll find, I mean, there's a whole set of things other than that I recommend in terms of asking them to repeat themselves, asking them to elaborate, asking them to clarify. And one of the things you find is if people are very practiced at scamming or conning people, the words will often be the same. When you ask them to repeat something or to clarify something, they will often use exactly the same words. It's like a pre-prepared script. And if you're hearing them use exactly the same words when they're, when they're elaborating or repeating, step back. Step back and just recognize, there's something not quite right here.
And if they're trying to like push you or rush you to make a decision, that's another key factor, isn't it, Joseph?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The whole scarcity thing, the urgent scarcity and urgency. Yeah.
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 Wanting you to make a decision right away instead of taking time to really reflect on it. That should be a red flag.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, again, another thing I recommend is if you're not sure about it and you're not feeling entirely confident, just say, I need to talk with my partner about it. Well, even if you don't have a partner, I need to run it by my partner. Yeah, gets you off the hook.
Joseph, I was going to go back to your bio. And for the listeners that maybe not know what this is, what is NDA? What does that mean?
A non-disclosure agreement.
Okay.
That's not uncommon in business where I go in work with a client. They will often be giving me information, or I might be reviewing photographs or videos of their clients or their staff or whoever. So I will sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, to ensure that I don't bring any confidential information away with me. I don't disclose it to anybody.
Thank you. Thank you for answering that. I wanted to say that I love how your LinkedIn page next to your name has face magic. What's the story behind that name?
Yeah, I was talking with a guy called is a guy in England, Gareth Wax, known as the man with the purple hats, or the many, he has MPH beside his name, many purple hats. Gareth is a very distinctive man. He specializes in training people how to use LinkedIn properly. And I had a number of conversations with Gareth where he was very, very helpful, very like he really took my whole LinkedIn profile apart. And he made a number of suggestions to me. So one of them was just putting the face magic bit in to just draw people's attention. Very simple.
Yeah, it definitely does. It makes you wonder, okay, what does that mean? Who is this person, right?
Yeah, it's one of those risky ones because some people will see the word magic and they'll just immediately go, no. But then it's okay to, you know. It's important to stand out, particularly in today's world. So, you know, not everybody is going to be your client, and that's just the reality. And like when I'm doing presentations to people, I tell them the good news and the bad news are exactly the same. Not everybody will like you.
They're not your soul clients or your clients that are gonna like you or, really connect with you. So, yeah, so you want the people that you connect with and that connect with you instead of the ones that don't, so
Absolutely.
that you can help
Absolutely.
them, help them the best way because you connect and you get to know them and you build that relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's it. Even in today's world where there's so much, you know, the advances in technology, AI, etc., are just like just beyond rapid at this point. Relationships are still central to business success, particularly sustained business success. So building our networks, but building networks not in terms of numbers, not in terms of quantity, but certainly quality, depth of relationship, where we're building again trust, mutual respect, mutual support, mutual understanding. It's that's where the longevity is, and that's where the real potential for success lies. Because when we build a relationship, a relationship of trust with somebody. It they're willing to open up their networks to us, their connections. But when we don't have that trust, people are going to be very, very wary. So it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, trust is important, and when that trust is broken, it's hard to ever gain that back. You don't gain it back. So you do
Very
want
difficult.
that. That is really important in your business and how you negotiate and things like that with people is building that relationship of really getting to know somebody and them getting to know you so that you can be sometimes brutally honest, I think.
Yeah, you know, Irish people are known for being a little bit, you know, softly in terms of how we speak. We don't tend to like conflict, but I was married to a German lady for 20 years, so I learned I can be also be very, very direct and to the point. And sometimes we need that in our relationships, not in the sense of ripping somebody to shreds, but being
Right.
very constructive. being very, very real. And we need it ourselves, because sometimes we can get stuck in our own patterns, or as my mentor would say, our own BS, our own belief systems, which don't necessarily serve us.
Right. And do you think that we need more of that honesty as in our businesses and as leaders and with our clients and with ourselves?
I would say absolutely. Absolutely. Like we've come through a very strange last few years, no matter where we've been living. And there's been a huge, I would say, lack of honesty in so many areas. There's been a lot of, whether you want to talk about misinformation, disinformation, fake news, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And learning who we can trust is very, very, very important. And that means we have to show up as being trustworthy. We have to be honest. And not, again, not in the sense of brutal honesty where we're being destructive, but being constructive, mm-hmm. and being willing to show up, being willing to own our values, being willing to live our values, but equally willing to listen. One of the areas that's really suffered in the last number of years is the lack of people willing to listen. So when we're willing to listen and be true to our values and be discerning about who we engage with, how we engage with them, then we can really build very honest and constructive and successful relationships.
Joseph, what's coming up for me is, with the changes of the last 4 or 5 years and companies not having stability, say for the employees, there's been a lot of change. And one of the things I've heard from people in companies is that because of the changes and the way the changes were handled, trust is not there. So how much is it that we have to explore? You know, there's a tendency in humanity to blame people, to blame the organization, blame someone in the organization, blame the government. And collectively, we're going through a change. But how much is it about, like, actually honoring how do we do change when we're going through, you know, a crisis, basically? I know companies are responsible for what they submit people to. How do we get more clarity about like if the trust has been broken, how we renegotiate that? I know you work with companies. So do you work more with teams in companies? Do you work with the messaging that they have for their members? How do you look at that situation of the trust that's been broken when it's to do basically with a crisis that's mishandled or badly managed?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge area. And I'm sure there are like massive seminars and lots of books will be written on that topic. My particular role going in is typically I will help with a negotiation process or a series of negotiation processes, or I will help with communication within a team or between the team and the leadership. I have to be informed about the background. So I have to ask very real questions going in. And it starts with the leadership. It has to start with the leadership, who they are, how they're coming across, how they see themselves as being perceived. I will profile them. I will tell them how I see them, how they come across to me. And it's constructive. It's not, again, it's not like it's not ripping them apart. I'll be identifying these are your particular strengths, but you might be perceived as this. Yeah. And a lot of that comes from leaders, like are people in leadership positions not being trained to be leaders. They may have, you know, technical skills, financial skills, etc. They haven't necessarily developed or being taught the people skills. They don't necessarily have an understanding of people's behavior styles, the psychology of people, how to engage with people. So very often what happens is people in those leadership roles will issue edicts. They'll give orders. They'll give instructions. Just do this. Or they'll micromanage without taking into account that you're dealing with humans who have feelings, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the essential things that comes up time and time again in reports and studies is that when people feel a sense of psychological safety in the workplace, they will contribute more. But again, that is so often lacking. And with all the changes you've talked about there, Angela, that have been happening in recent years, a lot of people in workplaces have felt an absence of psychological safety. So company leadership in whatever form needs to look at what does leadership mean in terms of how they're presenting it, how they're showing up, but then what is it they actually want? What do they expect from their clients, their colleagues, their staff, etc., and how are they going to go about it? And there's what has happened in the past, but there's really what's happening now and what we want going forward. And are we willing to learn from what went wrong? Are we willing to acknowledge what didn't work? And it's not a case, and it's not a case of blame. It's just saying we did X, it didn't work. It didn't work the way we wanted it to work. So now we have to look at it. What do we change? Why do we change it? And what are we looking for? And then there has to be a willingness to communicate openly with the colleagues and staff. And that's, I mean, it all sounds very simple. It's not easy, but it's simple.
It's actually bringing more humanity to the environment, which is ironically what the pandemic was supposed to do, bring us together, but we're still dealing with that actual change of behavior of how we communicate more from a place of openness and being able to share vulnerabilities without judging each other or ourselves.
Yeah, and unfortunately what's happened over the last few years with lockdowns, et cetera, has created a pandemic of loneliness and isolation. I mean, I'm hearing that from so many people, and so many people don't know how to actually speak anymore. I'm hearing, something that really surprised me a couple of months ago, I started hearing about it, the number of people who think it's rude to make a phone call.
Oh.
And I find, like, for me, that's bizarre. Obviously, I grew up with making phone calls on the old style phone, but it's just such an essential part of real communication. And even if you're just making a phone call to make an arrangement, the whole thing of hearing a voice is so different to getting a text message or an email.
Yeah, it brings better connection.
Absolutely. And the tone of voice communicates so much.
You can be much more detailed and ask questions when you're talking to them on the phone. And I noticed that too in the workplace. When I would pick up the phone and call somebody, I would notice some hesitation from people. They would want to do it in an email, or they didn't really want to talk. And I like to talk because I like to ask questions and to be more clear on things. And I found that with an email, it wasn't always clear and you couldn't ask the questions or get the answers that you needed. But when you talk to somebody, they can explain what's really going on or how what they want. Whereas in the email, it's so formal and there's no connection there. And I found that I wanted to talk to people because I wanted to get everything answered and make the right decisions. But through an email, it's hard to, you can back and forth asking questions, but it's not the same as when you're talking to somebody face to face or on the phone.
Absolutely. And there's another dimension there where if you're speaking to somebody, you'll get a sense of whether they're okay.
Yes.
Get that from an email. So if somebody's having a bad day, if somebody's really struggling for whatever reason, you'll pick that up from the voice. And then again, depending on the quality of the relationship, the depth of the relationship, then you can start to address that. How can you support them? What do they need? Rather than we need this done.
Right. And I'm sorry. And
sorry, my apologies. Yeah, I was just going to say, if somebody's really struggling, then the quality of their performance and the level of productivity is going to be down anyway. So it's not going to help you to push them to do something. But if you know they're struggling, then you can work around it.
Definitely. Being able to just sit with them and just have a conversation and look at their body language and look at what's going on and asking them questions, but not in a defensive way, but in a compassionate, empathetic way. And then you can find out, oh, are they overwhelmed? What is something going on in the office that you need to address or they need to address? Or what is something going on in their personal life that's affecting the work atmosphere? Just being able to communicate and help make the place better and to help them be better as well and find out what the underlying problem or situation is.
Yeah, and it demonstrates leadership qualities. And again, if people feel that support there, they're going to be willing to give more. If you're helping one person, you know, their colleagues are going to see it, that, oh, the leadership gives support here. So again, it creates a much better atmosphere. It boosts morale. And again, once morale goes up, productivity goes up and absenteeism goes down. And the other, like people talk a lot about presenteeism, where people are present in body but not really engaged. That's another massive problem in so many businesses nowadays. But if people are, you know, if people feel, and feel is such a big word here, so important. If people feel they're being supported and they're acknowledged and they're respected, they contribute more. It really is that simple.
When they like coming to work every day and they feel safe, they enjoy the work environment, they enjoy the work that they do, they will put in the effort.
Yeah.
Definitely. And if they like their coworkers and their boss and they feel comfortable with communicating their needs, that also makes the workplace more enjoyable as well. And people want to come to work and not just go through the motions and keep looking at the clock every 5 minutes. When is this going to end?
Yeah. Absolutely. And even, and it's not even about necessarily getting on with everybody, because you probably won't get on with everybody. But if the overall environment is supportive and encouraging, then it's so much easier to deal with issues when they arise anyway.
That's true because there is going to be conflict in the workplace, but how you manage that conflict or how you communicate with each other and don't sweep it under the carpet, but actually communicate together of what's going on and how you're feeling and how they're feeling, things get resolved and there's no hurt feelings because you're actually talking about what's going on and how you're feeling. And everybody's knows what happened and want to improve it. And but when you ignore it, then it just grows.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like one of the things I learned a long time ago. My father did a lot of management courses when I was a kid, and I didn't know what he was doing or what he was going on. But after he died, I found a lot of the handouts he'd collected and held on to. I remember one of them really impacted on me, where they were talking about when an issue arises in the workplace and you need to deal with it, depersonalize it. Because so much of what unfortunately does happen is things get personalized. But if we depersonalize it, say, look, this is the issue. This is what has arisen. This is how it's impacting. Let's deal with it, rather than you did this and he did that or she did that or whatever. It's when we just like, this is the issue we need to deal with. It creates a whole different, you know, it creates the potential for a solution and moving forward, rather than people getting entrenched and being defensive.
And talking about everybody that's involved coming up with the solution together
Yeah.
and talking about what will work, what won't work, brainstorming and saying this is the situation, but actually being heard. People need to be heard. And when they feel they don't have a voice, that's when they're going through the motions and not happy at work because they feel like they have no connection. They can't say, this isn't working, or I want to try this. I want to do it a little differently. Can I have that opportunity? Things like that.
Yeah.
Joseph, when you say the important part is understanding how the workers feel, do you teach leaders how to read those signals when people are not feeling? How do you lead a leader in their observation skills?
Yeah, typically that means that requires a training course where I will take them. Like I will work a lot with PowerPoint, to show not just static faces but video clips and point out various things. I'll ask them what they see, and then I will start to say, oh, like, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? And take them through a course where they're, and then I will, I will probably look at photos of, depending on the individual I'm working with, I may look at photos of, ask them to show me photos of their family members and talk about relationships there, or maybe people in their their business life they have or have had issues with, and with them we'll talk about what are the different communication styles and what are the behavior, like if I will maybe throw a couple of photos up on the screen. And then we will talk about, okay, this is your default pattern. This is their default pattern. So what tends to happen is you're talking at each other or across each other. But if you adapt this way, it creates a bridge instead. So I hope that's a reasonably coherent answer there, Angela.
Yes, it's fascinating to hear that you've actually got a training on that. And you're breaking down the facial expressions, because I notice that people, when they feel not heard, they go into what you said about just spraying a large amount of words or blaming people or thinking all these thoughts, but they're actually not able to read the body. And then how you mentioned that it goes back to maybe their other relationships, how it's all interconnected, and people don't see how they communicate is interconnected across all of their relationships. So I think that's very powerful that you can get them to see the images of other people's faces and bodies.
Yeah, and so often a lot of these conflicts, I mean, you can go into this in such depth, but so often a lot of these conflicts originate when we were 3, 4, 5 years old, and our behavior and how we, how our mother or father spoke to us, or a disagreement with a sibling or whatever, and we're still stuck in that default pattern of response reaction, rather than being able to step back and look at, oh, this is the situation that's arising now. It has nothing to do with whatever happened back then. So how do I choose to deal with it now in a way that's constructive? And that takes a lot of journey. God knows I've made enough mistakes myself in that regard.
Well, how does observation and listening skills allow us to build the trust and respect?
One of the things that was, I suppose, a bit of a wake-up call for me was when Donald Trump was elected in the US. I was conscious that there was, like, I'm not in the US, I'm in Ireland, but I was observing from afar. But I was conscious that there was so much division, so much stuff came to the surface very, very quickly in US society in particular. And I was reading an article by some psychologist, I can't remember who it was or what the publication was. But they were talking about, so often what happens when there's conflict is we try to persuade people by the force of our logic. But that's one of the biggest mistakes we can make, particularly when the views are diametrically opposed and there's a lot of emotion, on the surface there. One of the things to do, to step back from all the hot desire to convince, communicate, etc., get our point across, win the argument, all that stuff. One of the things to do is just take a breath and listen. But we have to do it with genuine curiosity. And our body language will show that, our facial expression. So if we're willing to go into that place of curiosity and ask, tell me more. Okay, I'm not sure I got that. Can you just tell me more why you think that, why you believe that, why you feel that, whatever? And really listen to them and ask questions out of a place of genuine curiosity. Because when we're caught up in the you know, the depth of our own feeling or the power of our own feeling, we often close down. But if we open up instead, when people feel listened to, it brings their defenses down. But and only when we've really listened to them. And you say, wow, that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing. And I just wonder, have you ever thought, if we bring it in that way, and even with that tone of voice, it creates the potential for a discussion rather than an argument. And it may be that we don't agree, but at least where we've listened to each other, it brings the temperature way, way down.
And so, Joseph, how does reading the room and listening to what's not being said build better relationships?
Yeah, so often what's being said is not what's meant, or it's not what people are really feeling.
Yeah.
So we need to pay attention to, again, things like tone of voice. Is the tone of voice congruent with the facial expression, with the body language? For example, if I say, I am feeling very happy, it's blatantly obvious I'm not happy. So that's really going over the top. But learning to pay attention to things like tone, pitch, rhythm of voice. And one way to practice it is to watch politicians being interviewed, particularly where they're apparently being very expressive and, you know, even emotional, very, you know, very eloquent. Watch politicians being interviewed or giving a powerful speech to inspire people, motivate people. Watch it and listen, and then rewind and watch it with the sound off. And ask yourself if what you're seeing now matches what you heard. And you'll often find it doesn't. So it's a very useful way to practice learning about reading the room, reading, again, the difference between body language, or the gap between body language and what's actually being said, the verbal language. As I find watching politicians like that, it can be very entertaining and equally disturbing at the same time. And I'm not mentioning any names.
They're all entertaining. So also, what is the importance of clear communication for strengthening and nurturing relationships in all areas of our lives?
Yeah, again, when we're in relationship, whether it's an intimate relationship with a life partner or simply family relationships, it's very easy to get in a rut and to take things and to take people for granted. So learning to maintain active, open, clear communication helps the relationship to keep alive, to stay fresh. And there's always going to be, there's always going to be times, particularly if a relationship has been there for whatever period of time, a year, 2 years, whatever. And this will also apply in the workplace. We can assume this person is this. We put people in a box. We put ourselves in a box. And we communicate the way we've always communicated. But when we keep things fresh, when we ask different questions, when we ask questions sometimes rather than not asking questions and making assumptions, but when we ask different questions or ask questions at different times, different tones of voice or different topics, it helps to keep things afresh. And even like in a workplace situation, I recommend I don't know if it still exists, but in the Catholic Church, when they were thinking about a significant change in whether it's cardinal law or the rules, I don't even know what they're called anymore, they would have what's called a devil's advocate. So there's what they're proposing, and then there's somebody who would argue against it.
Mm.
So, for example, in a workplace situation, you've got somebody who's advocating one decision and you've got somebody else advocating a different decision. If you ask them to swap positions, That's a very constructive way to get people thinking outside the box and to keep things fresh.
Great. Thank you.
And it can also come up with new ideas from that too, of how to handle things or improve things when you're hearing both sides.
And when you're compelled to think in a way that's opposite to how you have been thinking, and you're actually willing to go there, it opens up your own mind to new possibilities.
Yeah, when people share their thoughts about that certain topic, you'll hear ideas that you never thought of yourself and think, yeah, that's a great idea. We should implement that. Let's talk more about it. Or how should we implement it? Things like that. And then when you're talking about it, then you have another person that says, well, why don't we add this onto it? And you get more and more ideas because you're brainstorming and you're talking about things. And then people say, well, I don't really, this is what I see. This could happen. And you're opening up to make it successful because everybody is that's actually doing that position or work is has or is able to talk about it and say, well, I tried this before and this is what happened. Or, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Maybe we should try to test it and see what happens. It just makes communication, then people feel like they're involved in the work environment, and they're helping to make the work environment better.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And there's one other very simple thing that immediately comes to mind that people can do, because very often in meetings in a workplace, people will have their seat, the
Yes.
seat they always sit in. But if you're the boss, you're the leader, change the positions. Have everybody sit in a different place. Make sure you're not sitting beside who they normally sit beside, and do that every time. Again, and do it in different rooms. Go even go to a hotel or wherever to have the meeting in a different place, so that again you keep it fresh, so that there's always that element of the unexpected and the potential for something new. Because again, it's so easy to get stuck in our patterns.
Definitely. In negotiations, I have heard you say, understand them before you meet. How is that done?
Oh, that's my magic skill. That's
That's
where,
white
because
magic. Yeah.
that's the face magic bit. Yeah, that's where, I mean, that's where when I get a good facial photo of somebody, I'll give you a lot of information about who they are. So they may have their title, their qualifications, their background, etc. But I will identify the person. So I will tell you a lot about their behavior style, how they communicate, how they absorb communication, stress triggers, stress responses. I learned it as a diagnostic tool initially, so I can even look at maybe if there are significant health issues there. So I will give you a lot of insight into the person before you meet them, just from a good facial photograph. Sometimes people send me videos as well. And again, a video would be so revealing because you're seeing the body language as well. And it doesn't matter even whether they're necessarily speaking. Like there was I was asked to look at somebody. This is going back a few months now. Somebody in a senior leadership role in a European business organization. And I was sent a photo initially, but I went online and found various video clips. In some of them he was speaking, in some of them he was kind of peripheral. But the peripheral ones were more interesting because I could see how he was moving and how ill at ease he felt in a social situation. And it told me that this guy was confident in one space, but seriously lacking in confidence and social skills in another. So that gave me a lot of insight. And again, I was, you know, I could report that back prior to him being met.
Fascinating. Oh, wow. I could just spend all day doing your work. It's so interesting. And so for this year, Joseph, 2024, what are you thinking for your future plans moving forward and even beyond 24? How do you see your work evolving and how you work with others?
Yeah, it's always evolving. I'm in the immediate future, I'm likely to be doing a lot more one-to-one work. I've got a very specific plan of action in progress at the moment with a business colleague in California. So we're working on a very specific plan of action there to do a lot of individual profiling. I'm working on a strategy to get myself onto a particular TV program in Ireland, because I have something in mind there where that can expose me to a specific audience, not so much a public audience, but a behind the scenes audience. I will be focusing, I'll be doing bits and pieces of training, probably rather than, and if the first part of the year, bits and pieces of training. I want to explore a lot of ideas I've been sort of learning, and I want to put them out there and just see what kind of feedback I get. So I'll be putting out a webinar on listening fairly soon. I'll be putting that out on LinkedIn, because again, listening is something I've been paying a lot more attention to over the last year. Again, that whole idea of listening to what's not being said, listening to how things are being said, and then how to respond when we listen. Because so often what happens with people, we listen with the intent to reply, or we listen with the intent to rebut, to defend ourselves, rather than actually listening, just listening. So it's a massively important human skill, and it's going to be increasingly important going forward in our business relationships. So again, I'll be putting out various webinars and thought, and on probably some short courses on listening as well as observing. So there's various bits in the melting pot.
And you'll be putting the listening course on LinkedIn specifically.
Yeah, any kind of courses or webinars I put out there, I always promote them on LinkedIn primarily.
Thank you.
Well, that goes to my next question. How can our listeners find you or contact you about your services and your book? And it sounds like LinkedIn is the place.
LinkedIn is definitely the place. I do have a website, and the hard copy of my book is available through my website, which is clearsightcommunications.com. But my website definitely needs updating, because it is behind the times in terms of what I'm actually doing now. But the best place to find me is LinkedIn. So Joseph McGuire Face Magic is who to look for.
I love that.
And, yeah, I love that. Face Magic. We're fans of Face Magic.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
And what is the book, Joseph, just to remind our listeners? I think we said last podcast, but just remind our listeners about the book.
Sure. Yeah, the book is called Face Facts, The Art of Reading Your Clients and Prospects for Sales, Negotiation and Recruitment. It's a very simple, practical book. It takes people through like the eight basic face shapes, a series of forehead shapes, eyebrows, eyes, noses, cheeks, mouths, etc., and gives a visual example of each of them, and then an explanation of what it means in terms of the personality and how to communicate with them. So it's designed to be very practical and very usable to help people develop their observational skills.
It sounds awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah. So is there anything else that you'd love to share with the listeners, Joseph?
Just focus on relationship. Focus on building relationship, strengthening your existing relationships, not taking them for granted, staying fresh, opening up to more of yourself, because there's always more of ourselves. There's always more we can develop, more we can grow, more we can give. So what makes you feel alive? What makes you feel most alive? And particularly for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere coming out of the winter, there's a need to feel alive, to feel fresh energy. So what is it that that's, you know, that creates a spark within you that you need, you want to do more of, for the pleasure and the joy of doing it? Because when you do that, again, it it enlivens and nurtures relationship.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing about face reading and negotiation and all that you shared today. Thank you so much, Joseph, for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Patty and Angela. Absolute pleasure as always.
To our listeners, thank you so much for listening. And please share the podcast with others. And if you want to see us in the video, we're on Spotify. So if you do have Spotify, you can see the video and see our faces putting our best face forward. And check out Joseph's services and products. We will have Joseph's contact information in the show notes, and definitely watch his videos on LinkedIn. You're really going to learn a lot. I really enjoy them, Joseph.
Thank you for listening to Building Better Relationships with Angela and Patty. Send us a message and please like or share the podcast or donate with the Anchor Donate button. We really value your feedback.